This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say hosts, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. Super excited about our guest today. We've got Ryan Berlin. He is the Vice President of Intelligence and Head Economist at Rennie. Most of our listeners know Ryan, but for the people that have not heard him speak before, he is definitely one of the leading voices when it comes to BC real estate, the real estate market in general, and of course, the economy in general. And it's always a pleasure having him on the program.
Yeah. And you know, his position's a little bit different, right? Because he's not just out in the public talking about, you know, what's going to happen, what policies should be in place. Ryan is actually one of those guys, his job is literally to not only advise the Rennie real estate team, but to advise all their developer clients. And Rennie is a project marketing company that works with the biggest and best. So Ryan is the guy who brings the data and makes a case for certain calls, and those calls cost a lot of money. So he's in a very privileged position, and so are we, that we get to talk to him.
Yeah, and he's also he's maybe in a bit more of a stressful position than us, though.
Maybe. We have to produce this show once a week.
he's got a podcast too. He's got a...
Oh yeah, he does. He also has a podcast.
Of course, he's got the podcast is once a month, I think, though.
Right.
It's a deep dive into the data. But anyways, they're putting out great content there. Matt, before we get to our conversation with Ryan, of course, we have the MLA...
Well, wait, before we get to that, Adam, I just wanted to say, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned the Holway House Remembrance Day fundraiser, and it dawned on me after, we didn't tell people how to pick up those tickets. Basically, for those who didn't hear it or don't remember, Holway House, Jenny Conk and friend of the show, they're working in the downtown east side with veterans. They have basically a fundraiser going on this fall. Their goal is to raise $150,000 to help veterans transitioning out of homelessness on the downtown east side. Chard Development, friend of the program, has already donated $15,000. You can buy your tickets to this dinner at www.holwayhouse.ca. And Adam, I just wanted to mention, 6 city councilors have already purchased their tickets. A lot of the bigwigs in the local business community. Jenny actually said they're looking for people from the real estate community and they're looking for support. So that's holwayhouse.ca. It's going to be a great dinner and a great fundraising event. So everybody should come out.
And while we're on the topic of Holway House, we got to give a shout out to friend of the show, Natalie Janae, who introduced us to, also from Rennie, good people over at Rennie. So, but Matt, of course, before we get to our conversation with Ryan, we've got the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team.
The headline today, and this is kind of fitting in regards to the fact that we just had a interest rate decrease, the impact of interest rates on housing starts. So let me break it down here for you, Adam. Canadian housing starts dropped 12%. That's 30,000 units in 2023 from the typical 250,000 home average. Though September...
I'm surprised, 250,000. That's a lot of... Seems like a lot of homes.
That's a lot of homes. It's
higher
a lot of
than
people
I would have
guessed.
Country.
Well, here's the thing. September did see a 5% uptick, but that was led by Alberta, Quebec, and the Atlantic regions. As you can probably guess, Ontario and the BC markets face steep prices and low sales at the moment due to high interest rates. And Vancouver starts, that's housing starts, fell 19% year to date. The private sector builds 95% of housing in this great country of ours, and these construction shortfalls signal future supply issues as the population continues to grow. Despite some gains in rental starts, everything is pointing to continued housing shortages and prices increasing, which is not great. And the interest rates have a lot to do with that.
And I'm guessing, you know, my guess is that construction in Alberta, Quebec, and the Atlantic province is likely going to be, you know, some multi-unit, but a lot of also single-family detached housing as well, right? Which is still needed, but not being built at the same scale as we're trying to do here.
That's exactly it.
Well, Matt, if you like that and you want to hear more headlines that discuss the housing market, you'll want to subscribe to the MLA Newswire. This is a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLAcanada.com and subscribe today.
And Adam, as a final thing before we cut to our talk with Ryan Berlin, of course, this podcast is sponsored by our team over at Scalina Real Estate. We always like to feature one of our featured listings, and all of our listings are featured at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But let's talk about our listing this week that we're featuring.
Yeah, Matt, I love this place. I can't talk about it enough. I've been there a number of times this week on the North Shore, Central Lonsdale, Unit 803, 160 West Keith Road. Now, this is a concrete building. Listen to the square footage of this one bed. 752 square feet. When was the last time you saw one bed 752 square feet? Really, really.
They don't make them
like
that anymore.
No, they don't. They don't. And this is a corner unit. It's got sweeping water views. You're south facing from the North Shore, which means you get water, you get the whole city skyline, which is beautiful. It's such a terrific unit. And we're overlooking Victoria Park, which I haven't spent a ton of time at Victoria Park, but I have now recently. And it's unbelievable. It's like one of the nicest parks I think we have in Metro Vancouver. So I'm a huge fan. Lonsdale is obviously an amazing neighborhood. This is one to check out. Listed at 819-900. Really, really great outdoor space. And these views, honestly, you have to check them out at the site over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
I was going to say, Adam, the one thing about this is location, unbelievable. That Victoria Park pocket.
Yes.
Lonsdale, of course, Central Lonsdale and down to the Key. But anyway, this listing is at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. While you're there checking out these views from Keith Road, you want to hit sell with us. You hit sell with us and you can download the immediate download, the sold plan. We got to just briefly go over this, Adam. The sold plan, start on launch date, break it down.
Yeah, so the sold plan is our step-by-step guide to get your home ready for the market. The whole thing is designed to get you top dollar in the shortest amount of time. And it's very straightforward. All you got to do is head to our website and click sell with us, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. You can get an instant download, I should say, from the site once you sign up for it. We've had a lot of agents download it from the site. We've got great feedback from them as well. So happy to share. So if you're an agent and you want to have a look at it, feel free. We welcome it. So just head over to the site, download it, and it's really, really great content. So,
fantastic. Well, let's cut to our talk with Ryan Berlin from Rennie. This is one not to be missed.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that has been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burke Whitlam's most important intersection, Coma Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular, with 85% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one beds all the way to three bedroom homes remaining.
For a limited time, you can own a home at Elmwood with a 5% total deposit and 5% purchaser incentive.
Wow, now that's an incentive. Sales Gallery is closing soon for Elmwood. Don't miss your opportunity to own there. Learn more at marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soan House, Marcon's newest community that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Soan House offers 165 junior to three-bedroom homes in West Coquitlam that integrates nature into the built environment.
Register today at soanhouse.marcon.ca. That's soanhaus.marcon.ca. Or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with Ryan Berlin. He is the Vice President of Intelligence and Head Economist at Rennie. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great, Adam. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for taking the time today. Really appreciate we should say also fan favorite. You've been on the show a number of times. Always got a
great feedback. Is this a third feedback. Time? Third time, Ryan?
Third time?
Third time?
You got it. No, third time. Third time. Love being on with you guys. So looking forward to this.
Great.
Fantastic.
Well, yeah, it's too bad we can't do it in person, but next time. But can you maybe start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So what I do day to day is run the intelligence group here at Rennie. So what that means is I basically look after a department that has a bunch of geeks crunching numbers and trying to figure out what's going on in the market. And I mean geek in the very best way. I consider myself one of them.
Well, you are the head geek, aren't you?
The head geek. Go. Hey, that would be easier. Head geek. There we go. Okay. And yeah, and, I mean, essentially, like in a nutshell, what we're trying to do is just understand how the residential real estate market, in the markets in which we operate, primarily Metro Vancouver, but also Kelowna, Victoria, we're also in Seattle and Palm Springs, but just understand how and why they're changing, what's impacting them, obviously what it means then for the future, and supporting, as we do that, our own business in our planning and our growth. But also, Rennie's a number of different things, and we're not just sort of a typical organization, I guess, in the real estate services space, because we do have a brokerage with 300 realtors, we call advisors, and then we obviously operate in the pre-sale space as well, marketing and selling new multifamily development. So it's really just supporting the decision-making on the part of our advisors as they work with buyers and sellers, and then also our developer clients.
I feel Ryan, like Matt and I have been through some of the, we've seen behind the curtain at Rennie, and the data, the proprietary data is unbelievable. So, and maybe if you could tell people a little bit about what you're doing there, that's kind of different, because a lot of people will look to Greater Vancouver Realtors Board, right? The board for data, or for maybe CREA for data. But what's happening at Rennie?
Yeah, I mean, we use the data that is published by, the boards, the local real estate boards. Essentially, what we're trying to do, and yes, you alluded to having the curtain pulled back on our dashboard ecosystem at Rennie. And essentially, what that is just a place where, in effectively real time, as the data is made available, whether it's data that comes in every hour, every day, every week, every month, quarter, whatever, so real-ish time, all gets synthesized and brought together in one place, and then just gives us a view into different, parts of our business, and then overlaid into the market. So whether it's the resale market, or it's pre-sale, or it's rental, or we're looking at other things outside of real estate that impact real estate, so broader economic indicators and elements. And then other proprietary data that relates to projects that we're marketing and selling as well, meant for the eyes of our developer clients only, obviously, but all of that just lives in one space and gives us a fairly comprehensive view into at least what is going on. And then from there, we try to figure out why and where it's going.
Well, maybe I'll just put it this way, Ryan. How's the market? And we can timestamp this October 21st.
Yeah, exactly. Man, it sucks, doesn't it? It's really tough. And when I say that, because usually the market, if it's not good for one group, it's good for another, right? Like when the market's really, really hot, you got a lot of buyers out there, not a lot of inventory, prices are rising. If you're a homeowner, market's great. But if you're a first-time home buyer, it's not. But right now, it's tough for everybody. seems. And that includes not just buyers and sellers of individual homes, but developers who are bringing new housing to market, whether it is rental or it's intended for the ownership market, because the world is a lot more expensive than it was a few years ago. Fortunately, it's getting more expensive at a slower and more predictable pace, and we hope that continues. But I think when you look at sort of, you look at the policy backdrop, you look at the inflation and interest rate backdrop, and the fact that honestly, in Metro Vancouver, home prices, when we look at benchmark prices, for example, which we like to look at when we look at, when we're considering, you know, value changes over time as opposed to averages or medians, we see that, for example, condo benchmark prices in Metro Vancouver are only 3% off their prior peak. Now, that prior peak was the spring of 2022, so it wasn't yesterday. Prices have been subdued for a while. But we have this sort of killer combination of prices that are pretty high and then interest rates that are also, they're not quite historically high anymore, but also quite high. And it's just kind of frozen everybody. Like, people aren't able to make moves. And there's not a lot of grease in the wheels for the market, generally speaking. So it's a grind. I mean, you get the sense, I mean, you're both in the market too. Feel free to weigh in. I mean, my sense is there's, over the last few years, population has grown hugely, right? And people, every year, everybody gets a year older, pretty much. And life is happening, right? People are still having kids, getting married, getting divorced, they're downsizing. Like, all that stuff is still happening, but we aren't seeing those life-related activities manifest in housing market transactions, right? And so, you know, you get the sense that there is pent-up demand. Again, against this backdrop of extremely rapid population growth, that there is pent-up demand, but, you know, a couple of rate cuts ain't going to pry it all out all at once, right? So, yeah, it's tough.
So, Ryan, you know, one thing that caught my attention, and I don't know if you saw it, I feel like I see you passing ships in the social media night on LinkedIn, at least. I see you liking things and commenting on things. And one thing that caught my attention was the chief economist at BCREA and also past guest Brendan Augmentson just posted a chart where suggesting that sales for the first half of October in Vancouver had jumped to kind of that average, that 10-year average, which in other markets would still be like, oh, this is terrible. But it was a very exciting green shoot. Have you seen that? Is there kind of something going on in October that essentially hasn't been going on for the rest of 2024?
Yeah, that is a good point. And yes, I recall seeing that post and possibly liking it. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, we're tracking the data every day as well, and we've been noticing that we are on pace for looking at all of Metro Vancouver. So when I talk about this, the region of the Lower Mainland, I'm talking about the Greater Vancouver Realtors, that board, and then also the Fraser Valley Real Estate Board sort of combined. So we're on pace to exceed that 4,000 sale threshold per MLS sale. So essentially the resale market. And it's a little bit surprising, especially like given that. So October, there does tend to be a bump every year, right? Like, it seems like the cadence is that there's a bit of a flatlining in both inventory and sales over the summer. September, you see more activity. Again, hey, you guys are the ones on the ground, so you'll know this better than me. But I'm looking at the data and just talking to our advisors. And, you know, when people get back, once the kids are kind of like back in school and the routines are established again, people start poking around. They kind of reactivate their searches. We see more listings. So there's a bit more liquidity in the market, but it doesn't necessarily translate to sales in September, to actually these deals closing, completing. So yeah, we do start to see a little bit of a bump in October, but we are seeing absolutely a bigger bump than usual. And the funny thing is, yeah, I've been sort of saying when people ask me, you know, what is next year going to look like, 2025, I say it's going to be average, but you should be super excited about that. Because we haven't been close to average for a couple of years, right? So you noted that the October data are kind of looking like, it's like a typical October, but hey, we'll take it. And I think it does reflect that, again, the existence of that pent-up demand. Rates have come down a little bit. 5-year fixed rates have come down by more than what the Bank of Canada has cut to more than variable rates. So homes are, in Metro Vancouver, homes are, we look at a combination of home price changes and interest rate changes. Homes are objectively more affordable today than they were when there was peak unaffordability back in April, when prices were right near the peak and rates were at their peak. Housing is still very expensive, obviously, but I think people are sort of seeing this as like, oh, there's a bit of a, like a, there's a bit of light coming through the crack in the door there. And maybe we should like push through, because I think there's a sense that eventually, I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but eventually we're going to see the market reinflate to something that we recognize a little bit more than what we've seen over the last couple of years. So that is more activity.
How's the economy doing, Ryan? And in BC.
You want it straight? Yeah.
Yes.
Sucks.
Tell us what you really think, Ryan.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been watching this for a year now, where it's kind of like, you know, these high rates are really going to bite. It's going to take a while to dig ourselves out of here, potentially, from some of the damage from higher rates. And so now, you know, we look back over the past year and a half, and we've seen a significant deterioration in the economy and the labor market. And in real estate, we should really care about the labor market, because if people aren't working and earning an income, they won't be able to afford their home, certainly their current payments, and they won't be looking to buy a home either, right? So we really do watch that. And I've been saying the economy does suck, no doubt about it. It's unambiguous. It's not so bad that all of us should be really worrying about it at this point too much. Note it for sure, but you know, we're not at a crisis point, but it's just bad enough that the Bank of Canada really needs to pay attention now. So if you'll indulge me here, I can share a few data points. Like if we look at the unemployment rate, it's just sort of like an overall indicator of economic health. It's not a great one. It's not perfect, obviously, but it summarizes a lot of information into one number. And so you look nationally, and the trends in BC and Metro Vancouver are very similar. Like month to month, they're a bit different, but generally what we're seeing at the national level is what we're seeing at the provincial and lower levels. But the unemployment rate's at 6.5%, and it has steadily risen from, we had hit a low point of like 4.9% about 18 months ago. And so the economy was really on a good footing at that point, the labor market at least. And it's just been this like slow deterioration in that unemployment rate, unlike anything we've really seen in the last 50 years. So you go back and it's like, well, Canada's economy definitely has suffered acute trauma over the years, from the pandemic, the Great Recession in 08-09, the .com bubble bursting. There's been a couple of instances where we had some fallout from monetary policy that was too tight and kind of really squeezed the economy. But you go back over like half a century, and we haven't seen a period where there isn't like something specific and acute that has afflicted the economy. It's really a function of high interest rates, but we've just seen the unemployment rate tick up, 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 up. And we look at other things like employment growth over the past 18 months, way slower than in the prior 18 months. The number of unemployed people is up. The number of people claiming EI benefits is up. The number of job vacancies is down. Job vacancy rate is down. Kind of across the board, everything looks bad. And if you look at a couple of other measures of sort of economic performance, if you will, one is the labor force participation rate. It's just that it sounds like a lot. It's just the proportion of the population, the adult population, that is working or looking for work. So they're participating in the labor market. There's that metric, and then there's the employment rate, which is the proportion of people that are working, that simple, and supporting themselves and supporting everyone else who isn't working. With the participation rate and the employment rate, generally speaking, the higher the better, the lower the worse. And if you look over the past 25 years for each of those, and you order, and you look at monthly data, so you've got like, what? That's 300 data points for each over the last 25 years, and you rank them from low to high, both the participation rate and the employment rate for Canada are at the bottom of that stack. And some of it's definitely demographics at play, but none of the indicators we're looking at point to a well-performing economy. So there's your answer in not a nutshell.
So I'm just wondering, like, what, you know, because I think in the world of real estate, we probably are focused too much on, you know, everybody now is an armchair economist and talking about CPI data and you know, everybody's got an idea of when interest rates are going to cut, the jumbo rate cut, and what that's going to do to the market. You know, like, interest rates are almost like the sole focus right now. But what's your take on, you know, the next, let's say, 6 months to a year? Like, what kind of needle do we have to thread here? Because we have to kind of juice the market with cheaper money, but we don't want to, the more that happens, it's going to be because the economy's not doing very well. So, like, what does this look like in terms of kind of a soft landing or threading that needle to get more activity and hopefully not have an economy that's totally stagnant or in decline?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think that the opportunity to thread that needle, as you say, is closing, because no matter what the Bank of Canada does with interest rates in the very near term, they meet twice more this year. So one of them is October 23rd, and then the one after that is in early December. But there's enough negative inertia in the economy that I think we are looking at continued degradation in conditions, I suppose, in the short term, which is to say, in my opinion, that the bank just needs to act sooner than later. And you're right, Matt, in sort of saying that, you know, that there's a concern that if we just push rates down too quickly, then it leads to a surge of demand, and then we're dealing with an inflation problem again. And that is certainly something that the bank is cognizant and aware of. I'm not sure it's a major threat right now, because there just aren't really any economic tailwinds in Canada. Outside of, you know, population growth, which has kind of inflated all of those aggregate economic figures. Like, if you adjust things on a per capita basis, we're in a recession. But I, you know, we know the bank wants to move rates, their policy rate, into that neutral range, right? That's their god, 2.25 to 3.25%. And that's where monetary policy is. It's not restrictive, but it's not expansionary. It's neutral. And where rates are today, even though they've come down, I think it's important that people remember that they're still restrictive. They're better than they were, but they're still restrictive. They're higher than what the bank wants. And so it's kind of like, you hear a lot of big bank economists say this, like, listen, Bank of Canada and Tiff Macklem, if you know that you want to get into this range of 2.25 to 3.25, why don't you just get there? Like, what are we waiting for here? Like, how much pain needs to be inflicted on the economy, on businesses, on households, homeowners, renters, before you actually, you know, make a move? So, there was actually something out just this morning. I think it was Avery Schenfeld at CIBC said, you know what? There's a better case for a 75 basis point cut at the upcoming meeting than there is a 25 point cut. And I don't disagree with him.
So then I guess, you know, I think most people are thinking the inflation issue is, at least for the time being, tamed, beaten, mm-hmm. or finished with that. I was reading something in Bloomberg this morning, and I don't know if you have a take on this, about, you know, somebody was suggesting that, you know, yes, for the moment, but we are in a period of volatility. Like, do you foresee inflation kind of rearing its head a year from now? Or are we kind of back in this, all right, we're dealing with maybe disinflation for a bit, but the beast has been taken care of?
I'm sort of in that latter camp, where I think now that we're looking at inflation that is at, you know, the most recent reading from last week was 1.6%. And then that was on the heels of a 1.95% reading from the prior month. And I took it to two decimal places because it rounds to 2%, but it was actually less than 2%. And so there's the headline number, and then there's other sort of like versions of inflation that you can look at that strip out different things. To cut to the chase, if you exclude shelter from the inflation calculation, which is a pretty big component of the CPI, it's around 30%. So you might say, well, why would you do that? Because that's a real cost for people. And it is. But obviously, there's a mortgage interest cost component to it, which isn't a big sliver of the CPI pie. But because that component has been rising so much year over year, it's really been over contributing to headline inflation. And there's a feedback loop between monetary policy from the Bank of Canada and the amount of interest that you're paying on your mortgage, right? It's not necessarily a for everyone a direct line, but there's a very, very clear feedback loop. And a lot of countries don't include it in their CPI because of that. They say, okay, well, let's take out shelter because it includes that. It also includes rental accommodation. And this is an interesting one. So rental accommodation in the CPI has been increasing year over year by more than 8%. And yeah, maybe you've seen this. But no one who works in the real estate space will tell you that they are getting rents that are 8% higher than last year. I mean, rent caps aside, yeah, it's just in Metro Vancouver, rents are, over the last 12 months, kind of at best flat, but declining in places marginally. So it's a function of the methodology and the structure of the CPI. And so you go like, well, we know rents are not increasing by that much. So if we just take out shelter and you say, okay, there's a reason to do that. We can look at everything else, like the price of everything else. And I always say, you know, from lemons to Lululemons, horseback riding lessons to haircuts. And the price for all of that stuff together has been rising most recently by 0.4%, 0.4, outside of the Bank of Canada's target range of 1% to 3%. And basically what that says is prices haven't been rising outside of shelter over the last year. So I just look at that and I go, there's not a lot, definitely on the demand side, pointing to higher inflation. Inflation expectations are moderating in a really good way. With inflation, I say, if you believe it, you will conceive it. And basically what that means with inflation is like, if you're an employer or an employee or a household, if you think inflation is going to be high, your behavior is going to serve to reinforce that. And if you think it's going to be low, your behavior will also reinforce that. But so it's good when inflation expectations are lower as they are now. So I think outside of, you know, kinks in the supply chain right now, I'm not sure I see a lot of risk factors to higher inflation to the point where it becomes not manageable or we have to change course here too much. I think the Bank of Canada is going to have it under control, is my perspective.
So Ryan, last week we had Seva Roberts on the show. He's a property manager in Vancouver. He's got about 300 plus doors. His take, echoing what you just said, that rents are down, the rental market seems to be challenging right now if you're a landlord. What's your take on rents right now and what's happening in the rental market?
Yeah, you know, my take is, so what is actually going on or why it's happening is tough to fully know outside of the fact that we did see just incredible rent increases in the years after the onset of the pandemic and sort of ending about a year ago. So we just had like these big, big run-ups because high interest rates locked people into rental. And so you didn't have that natural churn in the rental market. We haven't had that over the last couple of years, the last few years, because home ownership has been really, really unaffordable. And I think that, it tightened up the rental market. The latest data from CMHC, which are not great because from a year ago, like it's literally from October of 2023, but points to a vacancy rate of less than 1% in Metro Vancouver. But I think now with rates coming down, I should say too, like that tightness in the labor market pushed rents up. Like I know some of the buildings that we were working with clients to lease up post-construction, so the initial lease-up period, you know, on a per square foot basis, those projects were achieving rental rates that gobsmacked some people. I mean, they were expensive. But the market was there for them, right? So you're not going to charge. This is the thing I think people forget about developers. And I don't think developers do themselves much of a service by not emphasizing this. And that is that developers are price takers, right? The developer cannot set a price, or a homeowner. You can't set, there's a price you'd like. And maybe you don't come to market if you don't get the price that you need, but you don't set the price. And so I think what we saw in those rental projects that we leased, we saw these rental rates that we were really surprised with in terms of how high they were. But the market was there for it. And I think they're now, in my opinion, like circling back to the original question, my opinion is that these rents are like on a door basis, not a per square foot basis, but like what is a monthly rent for a unit. We're getting to the point where like we're kind of hitting a bit of a ceiling, is my sense, from an affordability perspective. And also from the perspective of people are looking and going, well, you know, if I'm spending $3,500, let's say, for a two bedroom, so maybe it's a couple household, you go, well, we're not that far off from just being able to afford a monthly mortgage payment on this unit. There's the issue of like cobbling together the down payment, but I just don't think it's such an obvious choice when the prices get to where they are in some instances. So I'm not surprised that we've seen the trajectory of that market change. And I think there's a lot of new purpose-built rental coming. So with lower interest rates sort of like unclogging the rental market too, I think for some landlords, there's definitely an opportunity for higher rents because they'll turn over when they hadn't for a while. But I do think we're just going to see more availability for a little bit, despite the slowdown in pre-sale activity, meaning the secondary market just won't have as many homes in it, as many rental homes.
And we've already kind of talked about this, and you hinted at a few things, but I just kind of want to flesh it out a bit. This right now, obviously, the market is quite soft. Lots of purchasers on the sidelines. What do you think is the driving factor for people to be on the sidelines right now? Like, is it affordability? Is it people waiting for rates to come down? Is it uncertainty? Is it people just feeling like everything's expensive and feeling like they're, you know, let's wait and see? What's happening?
All the above. Have we hit that ceiling?
Nailed it. Yeah, the ceiling in terms of values?
No, yeah. Well, I was just thinking, going back to what you're saying about rents, like, you know, you said we've just kind of hit a ceiling where it's like, it just, the market can't bear anything more. And one thing, you know, we had Brian Yu on the show, and we asked him this question from Credit One, but like, is there room in the real estate market, you know, or is it just like affordability's kind of clamped on this? Are we in a hangover from like the COVID steroid period where everything moved a lot quicker than is normal, and how long does it last? Is there any room in the real estate market for price growth, I guess? And sorry, I stepped on Adam's question. I can't even, maybe it was different.
No, like what's keeping people on the sidelines as well? And then I guess as an extension of that, yeah, is there room for price growth? I mean, I will say on the second point there that I think there's always going to be price pressure. And I realize I work in the real estate industry. And so I know some people might be skeptical of a perspective that says, oh yeah, well, values are always going to increase. And I don't think that they increase, but there's some limitations to that statement. Obviously, there are cycles that markets are going to go through. And so just because I believe that, you know, values will go up over time doesn't mean that there's actually any right time to buy or right time to sell within that. So there's going to be a lot of movement within the market over time. But we have seen, you know, over the past, over the past 4 years, incomes in BC, if we look at the average weekly earnings data as a proxy, have gone up by 15% and have actually outpaced changes in home prices over that period, over the last few years. So by some measures, you know, households are able to maybe afford a bit more. A lot of equity moving around the market as well, a lot of equity in the market, because we haven't seen prices drop off a ton. And we're always going to have supply issues here. So, you know, I don't think we've hit a cap on values for sure, but I do think that for ownership, but I do think that people on the sidelines, like you said the word uncertainty, and I actually think that's a big deal. I think uncertainty is like the worst. If you're certain about a negative trajectory or you're certain about a positive one, you can make decisions around that. But when you just actually don't know where things are going to go, it paralyzes you. And so that's, again, you're maybe a first time home buyer. If you're just not, you don't have a sense for where values are going or, you know, how much choice there might be in the market, whether that's growing or shrinking, or probably most importantly, what interest rates are going to be both today and maybe when you're going to renew in a few years. And then now the extra layer is like, is the economy on stable ground? Am I going to have a job in 6 months or a year? I think that those are the kind of things that keep people on the sidelines. And I think it also keeps developers on the sidelines. If they're not certain that they can bring projects into a market and sell enough to trigger to get that construction financing, they're just not going to launch. Everyone just kind of like waits for conditions to normalize. And we're not there. They're normalizing. But, you know, I don't see the market looking sort of typical or normal outside of what we've seen first half of October here, really overall until the spring of next year is my guess. Now, could bounce back faster. It could take longer, of course. But I just think that there's nothing overnight that's going to change the dynamics that we're seeing until we just, I think you just need, consumers just need to know that like, okay, interest rates are coming down and they're going to stay down. So I'll be able to continue to afford my home. Therefore, I'm willing to jump in.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting. Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Just thinking about, you know, what it takes to get people back into the market and, you know, thinking about interest rates coming down. Like one thing that I've been seeing more and more talk about is that the fixed rate market is already kind of priced in some of these cuts that are coming for the Bank of Canada. So, you know, for anyone unlucky enough to have locked into a variable rate a couple of years ago and not made any change, that's great news. But for people that are either getting a 3 or 5 year fix now, you know, it might not actually have that big of an impact. Do you see? Can you just talk a little bit about that and maybe explain that for listeners that are kind of unclear on the difference and where we're at with the difference between the overnight rate and the fixed rate market?
Yeah, I mean, when banks offer up those like those longer term fixed rate mortgages, they're making a guess about what they think short term interest rates are going to do over time, over that period. So I think that everybody feels strongly. I can't remember Adam or Matt, who it was that earlier said, everybody's kind of like an armchair economist now. Like,
oh yeah.
Before the pandemic, nobody knew when the inflation data was being released each month or what it was saying. It was always 2%. And then, or the Bank of Canada, you know, just tinkering at the margin all the time, like quarter point here, quarter point there, up, down, whatever. So I think now the expectation on the part of markets and essentially everybody is that rates are coming down, that inflation is going to be tamed. So I think the big banks are essentially forecasting going forward that inflation is going to be 2%. So if that beast has kind of been corralled, then it says that interest rates are going to settle back into that neutral range of sort of the overnight of 225 to 325. And then you got to add a risk premium for different types of lending. And obviously, you know, lending into home ownership space, there is some risk on the part of lenders. So once all these things stabilize, there's essentially a delta between the overnight rate and like a 5 year fixed rate. And so that available rate right now is assuming that, you know what, we're going to get the overnight rate back into that neutral range. Inflation's going to stay down. So interest rates day to day are going to be low. And so, yeah, we're not going to see too much of a change going forward in the outlook for that 5-year fixed rate. And that, our forecast too is for it to be in and around where it is today, which isn't great news for a lot of people, including myself, because I have to renew at the end of next year. And I was really hoping they'd come down more. But I think that's probably the reality of it.
And does that, so I guess just to follow up on that is like, does that, you know, everybody's waiting for interest rates specifically to kind of light the new fire under the market. Mm-hmm. But if 5-year fixed rates or 3 to 5 year fixed rates, which is what most people take, have kind of already declined and there's been no real uptick. Like, do you see an issue there with like, is it a psychological thing that happens where people go, okay, we're now just more certain that interest rates are going to be lower for longer? Or what kind of is that spark that we need?
For sure. And I think there's downside. There's a scenario where rates actually settle in the medium term lower than some of these forecasts, including ours. And that, again, goes back to, you know, how much does the economy suffer? Now, the economy suffers too much. That also doesn't really support an active housing market. So there's a balance here. But I think there's definitely a psychological element to interest rates coming down. But there's also, you know, people hold all kinds of debt, right? It's not all just in your mortgage as a attached to a fixed rate. And so
that's a great point, actually.
I mean, when you look at, you know, like somebody with a $100,000 HELOC, right, that's going to be pegged to prime, which is then pegged to the overnight rate effectively, like $100,000 outstanding on that with a 0.25% rate cut saves somebody about $20 a month, which is not a lot. I call it beer and fries math, because you can take that savings and go buy beer and fries at the pub and it's gone away. So, like, it's not going to move the needle for the market as a whole. But there is a cumulative impact that multiple rate cuts has. And for homeowners as well, if you actually have an adjustable rate mortgage, which not everyone does, like a variable rate mortgage where the payment changes. Like I did the math for Metro Vancouver, a benchmark home, which costs, you know, $1.1 million. And if you put 20% down, then you've got an outstanding balance of $900,000, which is a lot. But for every 0.25% cut then in your rate, you save $150 a month. Then there's 12 months in the year. And on top of that, you know, if you just, like, just for the sake of the exercise, you run it through a household's marginal tax rate. So let's just say it's 35%. That 0.25% cut for that household translates to an increase in before tax income of $2,500. So, like, we talk about psychology. 3 rate cuts that we've seen, so like the 75 points we've seen come off already since the start of the summer, equates to this hypothetical household, equates to like a $7,500 raise they've gotten at work. So you make a good point about the fixed rate, that it's not going to be, you know, we're not going to see 1.39 again, mm-hmm. you know, anytime soon, unless things really hit the fan. But, you know, there's probably a little bit of a downside to that 5-year fixed rate from where it is now, a little bit, but not a ton. But, you know, I think just generally there's definitely a psychological component to it. And I think it goes back to as well, just the certainty of whatever rates are, at least if they just stay there, we can work with that. Like, interest rates don't need to be at any particular level for our housing market to work. I mean, you'll see adjustments, like, as they change, if they change too quickly over too short a period of time, it creates a lot of losers, some winners, a lot of losers. But ultimately, at some point, you recalibrate and our market will then get back to functioning how it did.
I'm just thinking, do you have like a, you know, I remember a mortgage broker is also kind of a real estate talking head, had kind of tweeted that, you know, at 3.75, or, you know, there's like the magic number that kind of stimulates the market. Is there a number in your mind? Because presumably, if we have a couple rate cuts this year, like, we're going to be looking at least 3-year fixed under 4% in the new year, right? I mean, like, which is, you know, we've been there before in this market, in, you know, busy markets, right? So
yeah.
Do you have a number in mind or a rate in mind that really kind of triggers activity?
So this is not anything I've modeled. So it's not too precise, but I sort of, you know, I look at, we have mortgage rates that are back into the mid 3s. That's going to be some nice grease. I think people can live with that. And feel okay about committing to that kind of a rate. And I think there's some of the shorter term rates you're going to see come off a little bit. The 5-year fixed rate could end up at this is what I'm interested to see over the next number of months, like through the next few Bank of Canada meetings and rate decisions, is there's a larger than expected cut at these upcoming meetings or series of cuts change the calculus for markets as it relates to where rates will end up. Because right now, you know, you say between 2.25 and 3.25 for the Bank of Canada, we're guessing that they end up at the lower end, like at 2.5 by the middle of next year. But you do start asking the question that if they cut 50 points at this upcoming meeting and maybe 50 points again, or they surprise at one of these meetings and cut by 75, it's like, oh, does that mean that the terminal rate is still the same and we just get there sooner? Or does it mean that we're actually cutting deeper because the bank sees something they really don't like in the economy? So that is definitely going to be something to, I think, watch through, you know, the next few meetings, so into early 2025.
That's a great point. I just want to touch, because I mean, we've kept you now for, we're coming up on the 45-minute mark. We are kind of in election purgatory here right now with parties running fairly even and 49,000 uncounted votes as well, right? So it we're in this moment where it's like it's maybe looking like the NDP, but the Conservatives potentially have a chance. What does the election do to the psychology of the market, or how are you factoring in a Conservative government over an NDP government? Because it's clear to me that that plays a huge role in our market.
Yeah, and I guess it's still theoretically possible that we do get a majority government here. And so then that would sort of change the trajectory of things in a way versus, you know, if we end up in a minority situation where an alliance is formed with the Green Party. But I don't think, like, if I really distill this down to, like, if we look at, for example, the sort of micro market of individual buyers and sellers, I don't think that there's going to be enough of a real impact on anything to actually change the mentality. Like, again, I go back to, there's a lot of intrinsic value in the housing market. Like, nobody needs to own a T-bill, a stock certificate, fancy hotel, a piece of artwork, but everybody needs a home to live in. And I think what really drives the need there is how your life is evolving. And so I think that is separate from politics and policies in my mind. And so I think that desire to buy a home or to move up in the market or to get out of the parents' home and rent or whatever, or to downsize, like that is driven by economics and the policy environment to a point. But I think people are still going to make those decisions. I just think the timing gets changed a little bit. And I just think there's not enough of a, like, especially without getting too much into it, but the Conservatives, I think, in their housing platform, I think we need to learn more to really understand what the market might look like or how the market, the housing market, would evolve under a Conservative government. But I guess this, in my opinion, I'm not sure that we're going to see much of a change. I know we have a lot of elections. There's the provincial one, there's the US election coming up, and we'll probably have a federal one, I don't know, in the spring or something. But I think that there are sort of bigger things that will evolve the market beyond politics.
So, Ryan, just in kind of your framing there, one thing that I feel like we would have been talking about a couple of years ago that we're not talking about now is our real estate investors. They fundamentally left the building. Mm. You know, I'm curious from your perch at Rennie, because you're literally advising developers in the presale space about demand. And of course, as I think most of our listeners will know, a lot of that demand comes from people betting on the real estate market or investing in real estate, right? What's your take on, what does it take to get investors back into the market? How detrimental has that been in your mind? And, you know, what does it look like over the next couple of years?
I mean, yeah, investors have had a rough go for sure. And as you say, they're very key to, so investors are interesting. They're, as a group, very, very important in bringing both rental housing, new rental housing, to fruition. So adding or growing our rental stock, but also growing the housing supply more generally. Because again, as you say, the developers, when they do bring these projects to market, they know that there are going to be end users, so people who buy their homes to live in. themselves, and then there's investors who are buying them as income properties, and obviously they make their way into the rental market. And again, in BC, because of the Real Estate Development Marketing Act, which puts constraints on developers to sell a certain amount of each project by revenue, 60-70% within a 12-month period. If we take out some of that demand for homes, it makes it a lot harder for these developers to hit their financial thresholds that allow a project to go ahead. And so then therefore they do stay on the sidelines. In our own data, we look at from Rennie's perspective, if we look at all of the projects that we have marketed and sold over the past few years, between 2021 and 2023, approximately half of all purchasers said that they were investors. Through the first half of this year, that figure has dropped to half of that. So it's down to 26%. And so that is problematic. And I guess the reality is right now that if the cash flow math, that picture for investors is very ugly. If you look at what it costs to buy a pre-sale home today, what market rents are, if you look at strata fees, property taxes, the cash flow on units, if you're putting 20% down, I did an analysis looking at different bedroom types across different parts of this region to see if there was sort of like, hey, well, here's an opportunity. And it's just negative across the board. It's not even, the big culprit here is interest rates on the one hand. It just makes owning more expensive for sure. But also policy has not been friendly to investors. If you look at some of the changes recently, investors and landlords, right? If you look at changes to the capital gains inclusion rate at the federal level, although that's not actually law yet, which is funny, but the short-term rental restrictions, obviously changes to the Residential Tenancy Act. We have speculation of vacancy tax, empty homes tax in Vancouver. So we'll have a flipping tax that if the NDP is back in power, will likely come into play in January. So it creates all these constraints on investors, and the landscape for investing is not very appetizing, I would say, right now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Well, also like uncertain, like you talked about before, right? There's a level of uncertainty where every 6 weeks, it's like the goalpost has been moved.
For sure. Yeah. And like, why would you want to play in that sandbox, right? Like, you don't have to put your money in real estate. With those, like the cash flow being what it is on these things, you just go buy like a five-year Government of Canada bond, risk-free, right. Make a return,
So if I gave you a magic wand and you could remove policies at either the municipal, provincial, or federal level, which policies would you take out?
Right now, the policies that I would take out is the ones that I listed. That basically put... Oh, yeah, I would. I mean, and they're varying from like the... They all have good intentions, right? And they're constructed, like, in my mind, without malice. They have a goal, but I think there are unintended consequences that come with these things. I think we can all agree that we don't want to live in cities full of empty homes, right? We think people should be living in homes. I think you'll get almost unanimity on that one. But I think that when you look at some of these, the sort of cumulative impact that these policies have, again, creating a world of uncertainty and just sort of making it that you need to like really somehow you have to thread the needle as an investor to really make it worthwhile to invest in real estate right now. I think that's where we need to change the math and roll back some of these taxes and restrictions and support. I mean, it's going to sound like heresy to some people, but like support investors' participation in the market, actually, with a view to growing our housing stock.
Yeah, hug a developer. I'm just thinking out loud, like, and this kind of was actually how I should have framed the question about the BC NDP and the Conservatives. But it is that idea that I think a lot of the housing platform is, I know it hasn't been completely explained, but the Conservative housing platform, a lot of it is rolling back a lot of these taxes or policy, right? And that's my thinking. Like, does that make the market rip in the sense of, or like go on a run with, just even getting investors back interested, that they know that, okay, there's a bit more certainty in that, the goalpost isn't going to be changed every 6 months, as Matt said.
Right. But maybe every 4 years. I think that's,
yeah.
The thing.
Like, right.
Right. So, I mean, I think you're right that it could create a more fertile landscape for investors and others that want to participate in real estate. If we roll back some of these things in the short term, it's just a question of can we across all parties, commit to, like, have the same sort of vision for, like, how to make the housing market more sustainable and less unaffordable over time. And I'm not sure we're going to get there anytime soon.
And one thing about that actually I've never really thought about, but all the headlines this morning are, you know, just like 2017, you know, and the political landscape in BC is hyper-polarized. All these things that make you think, oh yeah, it is literally, like, real estate's a long-term, from an investment standpoint, it's generally speaking a long-term play. And if every 4 years you're going to swing wildly in one direction or the other, you know, actually it's maybe a scarier long-term landscape than I was thinking. I'm almost Absolutely. Thinking, I don't want to say this out loud. This is...
Save that one, Matt.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Capital doesn't need, like, the capital that's here and that might be in the housing market now or earmarked for it now, doesn't have a ton of constraints. Like, it can go elsewhere, right? So conditions aren't conducive enough to investments. We won't see it. I mean, that's it.
People forget that, I think. I think they think that there's an unlimited appetite for money coming into this province. And I think it's being proven wrong. Ryan, we've got, and I'm now we're close to an hour here. Headline for the real estate market for 2024. And then same question, but prediction for 2025.
So the headline for 2024 is, well, I can't swear. Did I already swear on this podcast?
It's a family show, Ryan. It's a family show.
Everything's,
we'll just bleep
everything,
you.
Everything's bad. Okay. Everything's bad. Like, it's just been a rough go in 2024. Everything's bad. But my outlook is I do believe things are going to get better. And it's not something I say all the time, but I look at, you know, the direction of in some of the things that I think matter to this market and specifically maybe like sort of the tip of everything is interest rates coming down. Next year is going to be average. That's my prediction. And that sounds like uninspiring, but you know what? If our market is average next year, it's going to create more certainty for everybody, whether you're buying, you're selling, you're developing. And we're also just going to see more activity because we've been so below average.
So 2024 was everything's bad. 2025 was everything's better.
Yeah,
there you go. You're good. Better at this time. Yeah.
One more quick question for you, Ryan. And, you know, we often on the show say to people, okay, you know, you have a niece who's looking to invest somewhere in Metro Vancouver. What would you tell her what and where to buy? I think with you, it's a little bit the same question. You have a niece, but let's frame it as, you know, you're chewing the fat with Bob Rennie and all the major developers. You're literally behind the curtain on a lot of these decisions. Where are you telling your niece?
Well, first of all, I would just step back and say, you know, buying isn't it for everyone. You know, not everyone ultimately is going to have the means to afford to own a home. Some people, that won't sit well with them. And for others, that's perfectly fine because honestly, owning a home comes with a lot. It's a lot of work. So that's where I would start. Like, what kind of life do you want to lead? Like, and where do you want to live and how much do you want to move? Because maybe owning's not for you, but if you're going to buy and it's a matter of just getting your foot in the door, you know, listen, leasehold opportunities are a great way to get a little bit more home for the same price as freehold or to pay less. Like, typically there's about a 20% differential in values. And so if you are looking to have, like, you want to experience that pride of ownership, so leasehold's a little bit different. Obviously you don't own the land like you do in freehold, but you know, on a 99-year lease, it's going to feel the same. And maybe that's the sort of foot in the door for you to experience some maybe appreciation in the market. You pay down your principal, so you have a little bit more equity that then maybe you can move into something else. And it's whatever it is, though, it's just don't stretch too much. Just stay within your means, whatever that means.
We have a friend of the show who says, buy leasehold and then... put your savings into like Vanguard or some kind of investment, which is interesting advice. But I think you're right. It's funny how, and I mean, I think the future obviously is going to be a lot more leased land developments, right? I mean, we're seeing that now. But I also feel like the the acceptance of leasehold has changed a lot just even in the last few years and will continue to do so. So,
yeah, I agree.
So we have this segment called The Five Wire, Ryan. You may have heard of it. I think you've participated in it before. Do you have a couple minutes to stick around and do The Five Wire?
For sure.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform. Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
Okay, so question number one is one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
A book called Simply Put by, I think his name is Ben Gutman. And it's 200 pages and you can read it, honestly, in a day if you've got some time. And it's just about, it talks about how to clearly communicate and really to put the effort in to make your messaging more simple and concise so that people who aren't necessarily asking for you to speak to them or sell to them or market to them are more receptive to what you're saying.
I feel like that was a direct shot at my questions today.
I was going to say there's a great irony that I just talked for almost an hour.
Yeah, we could both use that book, I think.
Yeah, no
question
kidding.
Number
Simply
two,
put,
Matt.
Yeah. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Intermittent fasting.
Nice.
Oh, interesting. You're still on that, eh? I feel like...
On and off it. But when I do it, that is something I hadn't been doing previously. And when I do it, it's like, it's kind of like magic.
Are you the, is it the 8:16? The 8-hour eating
exactly.
Window? Yeah.
Yeah. We have these eating windows, or they call it feeding windows sometimes. Or sounds funny to me, feeding window. But I mean, it can be whatever split you want. The more, I guess, you can concentrate your feeding, if you will, I guess the better. But yeah, 16 and 8 tends to work for people, it seems.
Nice. What have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
That's a good question, because I'm not always binge watching something, but I am just finishing Breaking Bad and I hadn't watched it until like a month ago. I was like, I should watch Breaking Bad. So
you'd never seen Breaking Bad?
Never.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, this has been an awesome month. Like I think I've got like 3 episodes to go. So a little, feeling some melancholy, like a little sad that it's ending, but it's been awesome.
Well, you know what, on a totally different page, but something I'm going back over for, I guess just the second time, is Mad Men, which...
I haven't seen that.
Oh my God.
Wow.
I'm back in season 3. I didn't realize, first of all, it's 20 plus years old now, or 20 years old, season one. But man, it makes what I've been thinking about is it makes you, there's so much good TV out there, but it really makes you realize there kind of was a golden age of TV at that time, like with Sopranos and Mad Men, and it's so good. Anyway, you got to do it. You got to.
Okay. Yeah. If you're doing it for a second time, then I got to do it once. And there's The Wire too has been recommended to me, which I haven't seen. And same
era. You got the whole winter.
You've seen Sopranos, right?
I haven't seen Sopranos.
What? Oh my God. Wait a second. And you're starting with Breaking Bad? Hang on a second here. Let's pump the brakes. You got a Sopranos is got to be
I think Sopranos has got to be your number one.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I think I've done it at least 7 or 8 times. It's like a Christmas.
What?
miracle every year.
Yeah. Oh my God. Christmas miracle.
That's amazing.
Okay. No, your favorite band or music. Yeah, here, I'll favorite band or music.
Yeah, my favorite. I'm like really into like indie rock these days, and Lord Huron is Lord Huron and Reuben in the Dark are my go-tos.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard of either of those.
Okay, so here's Lord Huron. You'll probably recognize some of the songs. And then Reuben and the Dark. He is actually, I think he's Canadian. He might be from Alberta. I think he lives in the States, though. But he's like, we've seen him at the Hollywood over here on Broadway, like smaller venues. Like, this guy's voice is off the charts good. The music is so good. And you're like, how come you're not playing to, like, I don't understand why you're not playing to, like, arenas. Anyway, check them out. They're all over Spotify, obviously.
Yeah, Reuben and the Dark.
Reuben and the Dark, yeah. Hold Me Like a Fire. Start with that one and go from there.
Okay, sounds good. Last but not least, Ryan, and thanks so much for your time. Something you've purchased for under $1,500 that has changed your life or had a profound impact on your life in the last few years.
That is, man, that is like a... That is a tough one. Maybe a Theragun. Yeah, it gets tons of use.
Right on. Well, thanks again so much, Ryan, for your time. Like I mentioned before, you're definitely a guy to follow on LinkedIn, but where else should people look for what's going on with Ranny, with the intelligence, all the stuff you guys are putting out? I know you guys are doing a podcast. Give us all the details.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that plug. Yeah, we've got the Rennie podcast, which is, it is not as frequent. I know you guys are up to like, what, 800, 900?
I don't know.
Episodes?
At least 400.
I mean, we're at like 60. So we do like one a month. So very, very, very modest podcast. But, you know, we talk about the market each month, the latest market data. So you can find that on wherever you listen to podcasts. And then if you go to rennie.com/intelligence, we produce all kinds of reports on the resale market, pre-sale market, and then weekly updates to commentary on what's happening with the economy and how that's impacting housing.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we're big fans. So yeah, thanks so much for taking the time today, Ryan. Always great having you on the show.
Anytime. Thank you for having me back. Really enjoy the conversation.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Ryan Berlin, Vice President of Intelligence and Head Economist over at Rennie.
Always enjoy having Ryan on the program. It's usually nice having him in studio because we always get to catch up, but good having him. We were all online today. So
we were all online. The one thing that struck me at the end is Ryan must have really been grinding it out in the numbers to miss all that good TV. I left thinking, you know, Sopranos, Mad Men, like,
that was
where was
insane,
he?
Eh? Where,
yeah. I know, the good news is he's probably got a decade now of just like
missing it,
you
again.
Know, firsts.
There's no way you don't go back. I don't think you can go back. Although the Sopranos thing, I feel like that's, I don't know. I don't know how you miss the Sopranos, but how do you resist?
I actually genuinely feel like my life is better because of the Sopranos. Oh,
100%. That's, 100%. Yeah. I live half my life as Paulie Walnuts, like just mentally. But anyways, this is...
Did you hear that, Tone?
It is. Yeah, constantly. Whether the person I'm talking to, his name is Tone or not. But here's the thing. That and also The Wire, another good one. But even Breaking Bad, I was like, man, it's wild that you get to watch all these for the first time again.
I know. And then he's got Mad Men. Like, I might even go back and hit up 6 feet under if I wouldn't go that far. But no, that's like, you know, if you haven't seen...
That's too far back.
If you haven't seen any of those, it's like, oof, defines a good portion of my earlier life.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Anyway, you were super cool. Watching a lot.
Anyway, what else do we have before we cut for the day? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer. We have VIP access to pre-sales. We have stats, different types of stats, dig into the sub-markets and the different price bands. We got it all on the LiveWire. We also have, of course, private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Also, I want to put a plug. Corey Wright is doing God's work over at the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. Also, that show is getting a lot of attention. One from a major publication in the commercial real estate world from the US. He was just tagged as one of the top 50, I think, podcasts. I think it was top 50 or top 30 even, but in North America. And they were almost all US shows except for Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. So if you're not listening to that show and you're interested in real estate in general, you should be, because it's another fantastic podcast to add to your list. And Matt, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Anytime, I'm available, 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We'll have a great week, and we're back next week with another phenomenal episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio.
Subscribe today.